Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I was trying, damn it, damn that countdown. I was trying to catch you singing.
You seriously nearly got me singing Peter Andre then. And that would not have been cool. I would have lost all my street cred cool points with that. Actually, unless, of course, I was in England and I had like a really, really dark tan and, you know, hair extensions and I was walking down a high street. Maybe then singing Peter Andre would make me cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I need to read you. One of my friends sent a text.
Oh, yeah.
It says, I think out of
respect. Oh, it's a thrill.
Yeah, no. It doesn't happen very often. So I'm reading it out on podcast to prove I've got friends.
Love that.
I think out of respect for Alexander, you need to do some serious research into Danny Minogue. The woman is a goddess and should be worshipped.
Who was that friend? What was it? What was their name?
Oh, look, I think for decency reasons.
What? Give them a pseudonym. Give them a fake name.
Well, let's call him Benjamin.
Okay, great. Well, let's hypothetically call in Benjamin and let's say, you know what, Benjamin, thank you so much. I agree. You should put some respect on the name Danny Minogue, all right? And in fact—
Do I need to do a public apology?
I think you do. And actually, I think all of Australia owes Danielle J. Minogue an apology. And I don't mind telling you here and I don't mind telling our listeners as well. Put some respect on the name Danny Minogue, people, if you're listening. In fact, I think we should probably touch on Danny Minogue in a future episode, maybe in another series. Maybe we'll do a whole Minogue expose. I know that you're such a fan of them, but perhaps I could take you on a journey through their incredible back catalogues. What do you reckon?
Well, I mean, Danny's just got such a long-lasting legacy. I mean, there was This Is It and...
And several other songs. I knew what joke you were going to go with there. There was This Is It. There was several iconic, seminal songs. You know, I'll play a little game with you one day. I did this with somebody, you know, who's like, oh, I don't know any songs Danny Minogue sings. And I was like, you know what? You do. You know a lot of Danny Minogue songs. You just don't know the Danny Minogue. So I played them for them and they were like, oh my God, I know all of these songs. I'm like, yeah, that's right. Eat your words. Love Danny Minogue. Danny, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you let Benjamin or whoever it is, person known as Benjamin, you let them know. Thank you so much. And you know, I really appreciate you. I appreciate you for being on my side here.
Okay. All right. And I'll do a public apology sometime in the future.
I think I'll make you do that on our Instagram.
Okay. All right. Well.
Maybe we should invite her on the show. We'll invite Danny on the show and you can tell her to your face. What do you reckon?
Okay. Well, you know, no disrespect to Danny, but I'm just not familiar. Anyway, before I get all our listeners switching off, let's hit the thing.
God.
I know we weren't going to talk too much about the lockdowns and stuff like that, but it's, you know, there are problems that arise from it that I'd never really thought of, like all the shops are closed and suddenly I'm in bad need of new pairs of socks, and I don't quite know what to do. Like, they've just shut down postal orders in Sydney.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So,
as in, you can't get anything on the internet.
Well, you sort of can, but it's just they've just said it's going to be super delayed. So,
my God, if Sydney postal orders have been shut down, that means maybe all my stuff will start coming a lot quicker.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it could just be e-commerce, but. Yeah, I'm in desperate need of some socks, and I'm trying to think of maybe I should start knitting them because I've got a ball of wool.
I don't know if a ball of wool is going to be quite enough to do a full pair of socks. I'm not really a knitter. Mm. But for those of you out there listening who are particularly into needlecraft, please feel free to let us know. Send in your instructions.
Yeah.
I was actually going to call them send in your recipes. Send in your recipes on how to knit socks, whatever. Yeah.
Let me know how many meters of wool I need for two men's size 11 socks, please.
Do you know what? My sister's a knitter. You know, she's got that craft room at her house, so her craftorium. So she's got that wall of wool. We can get her to, you know, send you some wool and you can get knitting.
She can just send me the socks.
She could just send you some socks even. She could knit you some socks. That's a good idea. I'll get onto her. I'll text her right now.
Okay.
Can you knit Alex some socks?
While you do that, I was going to say you've beat me to the punch. My name is Alex.
Hardly a punch. Hardly a punch, but sure. Your name is Alex. Good to meet you. Nice to meet you, Alex. My name is Alexander. It's nice to meet you. I'm a Capricorn. Nice to meet you too. I don't enjoy long walks on the beach, but I do enjoy hand knitted socks, apparently.
Okay. Oh, good. Now, as I logged on to watch the episode today, I got a little excited about the second season of Popstars because, you know, I was typing in Popstars into the search and it, like, a little thumbnail of Scandalous came up. And I sort of thought, I feel like with that one, I've got less fond memories of Scandalous. So I think it might be a bit easier to derive some humor from what's going on. You know, wasn't really a fan. I don't know.
I think it was maybe a different vibe, the second series. It's interesting that you are already, you know, getting excited about the second season when we're still in the, you know, the midst and the throes of the first series of Popstars. In fact, we're really hitting our strides now. We're really at this exciting, juicy point. And I'm really loving watching every episode, you know, everything that's kind of unfurling before our eyes 20 years again after having seen it for the first time.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm not sure that anybody in Scandalous actually remembers they were even in Scandalous. But anyway, was that short?
Well, I mean, there was one guy, and I think he might have been from Hobart, which is, Simon, you know, exciting for us. Yeah, that's right. And it did make me think, also, when we get to that one, we're not going to have to skirt around so much that, you know, we're two white dudes and we're sort of commenting on some young, you know, women sort of starting out their careers so much, and we can relax a little bit. And
that's right. So far, we haven't. Well, no, so far we haven't said anything offensive. I mean, I've probably thought it, but you know, we've been pretty open and honest and pretty you know, cool this whole time so far, I would say.
Yeah
I don't think we're giving off offensive you know, patriarchal chauvinistic vibes, are we?
Yeah, I know. We're disguising it very well.
oh god
yeah, and I
people are gonna DM in about that.
You reckon?
I reckon, yep.
Well, they'll be thrilled when you DM them back with something that proves the point. All right. Before I dig us any big social media holes, I'm going to move on into the recap.
Good idea.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Okay, a bit of a short recap this time because, you know, a little bit happens in this episode, but not as much as some of the, you know, we've just had the big Chantel Barry scandal, so we're not going to, you know, top that. But here we go, recap. Okay, all right. In an episode where there's not much drama, the narrator and the producers desperately try and draw drama out of the band performing to the head of Warner Music, some indecision over sets and costumes for the film clip, and deciding what the band name is going to be. And that's pretty much it.
Do you know, I know that you think there's not much drama in this, but yeah. I mean, I'm really deep diving into, you know, facial tics and nuances and moments and voice inflection. Yeah. And I'm really kind of, you know, I'm really experiencing this rewatching of pop stars very acutely in a very deep and personal way. So I'm actually noticing some things, thinking this episode is really quite layered, in fact, with drama, I think.
Oh, well, let's find out then.
Alexia.
Well, so drama. It starts straight away then, pretty much, if we're counting this as drama. because they're meeting Michael Napthali's boss, who I'm assuming is also Chris Moss's boss.
No, they're from different companies.
No, but isn't that the head of Warner Music, this Sean guy?
Yeah, but Michael Napthali works at Grant Thomas Management.
Yeah, but I think the narrator says that it's Michael Napthali's boss, I think.
Is it? No, isn't. It's the head of Warner Music Australia at the time.
Who I assume has taken on Grant Thomas Management as part of this project. So, like, if you follow the chain up far enough, this Sean dude is paying Michael Napthali's mortgage.
Well, that is true. Well, there is a bit later in the episode where I actually interpreted that Chris Moss was probably signing the checks because he kind of throws his balls on the table and he really gives Michael a bit of a seeing to.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's like, somebody better be managing this. Somebody better take charge. And I think he even gets bleeped, doesn't he, at one point?
He does get bleeped, yeah. An expletive is taken out for our sensitive ears.
He does. So I think actually Chris Moss might be the moustache-toting, check-signing boss, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe.
But at that level anyway.
Yeah, I think even then, you know, he's in there looking nervous as, you know, because they go in to sing.
That's true, he is, yeah.
Yeah, and even I think this is where we see a bit of Chris Moss looking a bit worried in front of his boss and look at what I've been doing, Dad, you know.
Yeah, look what I've been doing for the past few months. Yeah.
Look what we've spent all your money on.
Exactly. Like they took the training wheels off Chris Moss and this is what they let him do. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we get a little glimpse. We're really getting to know the band a bit more. And first of
I thought I'd just mention,
as you pointed it out, that what's his name? Michael Zamowski last episode was wearing some Mooks. Sophie was also wearing a Mooks t-shirt in this episode. It must have been the thing at the time.
Mooks was so cool. Whatever happened to Mooks? You know what? Mooks, people, if you're listening, please come back.
What were they? Was it just t-shirts or?
No, it was like a streetwear brand. There were a whole bunch of different brands back then that were so cool, like Mooks and Mossimo and Louis Epstein jeans and all this cool stuff. And Mossimo, it all just kind of disappeared.
About Mossimo.
You're right.
And then, secondhand clothing became fashionable and suddenly everyone was wearing Adidas again.
Speak for yourself. Secondhand clothing became fashionable maybe for you, mate. I don't think secondhand clothing ever was fashionable for me. I managed to find my way to a Westco through rain, hail or shine. There was not a synthetic fabric that I wouldn't have swathed my body in at 1999. If it was reflective and two-toned in colour, it was on me, hanging.
I mean, people made fun of me for wearing sunglasses indoors, but it was because I was sitting opposite you. And anyway, there was a bit, there's this bit where Sophie says, so they're talking about Sean, the manager of Warner, and she's like, is Sean like Molly Meldrum or something? And suddenly Michael Napoli suddenly gets, he goes so embarrassed and awkward because he realizes that Sean's probably going to be watching it. I didn't really get it though. Like, why is that a problem?
Well, I guess it's because Sophie, I think it's more adorable that Sophie has no clue. Right, you know, in her mind, you know, Molly Meldrum's like the be all and end all of music in Australia. That's what I kind of assumed. And she has a couple of other little, faux pas, you know, in the episode, which are really, really cute. And I think you are totally getting moments for these people's personalities. You can see, you know, Sally is kind of cheeky. She makes a couple little jokes and she's a little bit cheeky and that's quite cute. And Belinda's a little bit more serious. And, you know, Katie clearly is, you know, quite upfront and she really is really, you know, astute and experienced. And then you've got Tiffany, who I think gets a shitty edit in this episode, but we'll talk about her a bit later.
Yeah, yeah.
She gets dealt a raw deal, Tiffany.
So another subplot of this episode is them picking the band name. And as they're sort of being ushered into what looks like Sean's office, I guess, Chris Moss is having a chat with someone. And they're saying, oh, we're going to is it Belinda maybe? And saying,
I think it's Belinda, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be either maybe Supernova.
No, it's Katie.
Oh, it's Katie, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to be either Supernova or Frock. And then Chris Moss says straight away, Frock, as in Frock Off, which is exactly what I thought too. Like, they've been saying Frock for a couple of episodes now.
Oh, mine too. I was just like, Frock. No, doll. That was never going to fly. Supernova I thought would have been quite cool.
Yeah, Supernova's okay.
No, Supernova was the same sort of time. You know, people would have loved that kind of thing back then.
Yeah, it made me think a bit too much about there's an Oasis song, Champagne Supernova. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes me think of that too.
The wrong branding, you know.
Totally.
But for once, I found myself agreeing with Chris Moss, and actually today I'm dressed a bit like he was in that scene. No moustache for me today though. So anyway, they go in and Tiffany's pretty nervous by the sounds of it, and I was kind of thinking like she must have felt like a bit out of place because she was – it would be in my head the whole time that you're the second choice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think it would be, if it were me, I'd probably have that in the back of my mind as well. You know, I was second choice. But also at one point all the girls are sitting around the table in their apartment and they make a joke about it. And then I think Chris Moss even mentions it again when they're about to perform. And it's a bit like, you know, even the media, I think, since, you know, probably have referred to Tiffany as having been the replacement for Chantelle Barry. I mean, let's not, you know, whilst it is true that, yes, Chantelle was cast first and Tiffany did replace her in that space when she was, you know, removed from the band, all of the hits were with Tiffany. Tiffany's the one who ultimately laid those vocals down that track. Tiffany's the one who was part of them being successful. She's part of the band that everyone remembers. Of course, everyone remembers the scandal. But, you know, I think Tiffany, you know, definitely is getting this kind of edit in this episode where they keep talking about how new she is. And I don't know if that's in order to kind of explain away some of the slightly confrontational moments that she has later in the episode, possibly.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because even without thinking about the editing and the fact it's a show, like they're about to sing for this head of Warner dude.
Yeah.
And Chris Moss even brings it up. Like, he's like, so, you know, we've had a lot going on with Tiffany. You know, she's new and she's having to do a lot of catching up. But having said that, let's sing the song, like the big hit to the head of Warner for the first time. Like,
way
to like pull her confidence away right before like this big, horrible, nervous moment.
And what I thought was really strange too in that moment was, when the girls just kind of file into that office and they're standing around about to sing Poison a cappella, you know, we've got to remember that if you keep in the back of your mind, these people don't know each other. They've known each other for a matter of weeks, potentially months, you know, at best. And, you know, Tiffany even less so. And they've walked into this bloke's office, you know, in their minds, they've already kind of met all the people they're going to need to meet. You know, Michael Napoli, who's going to look after him on a day-to-day basis, Chris Moss, who's at the record label signing checks. Now they're seeing the big head honcho. And I suppose, you know, you'd be thinking, holy shit, this is really terrifying. And they all seem pretty chilled, I think. You know, yeah. Tiffany does have a bit of nervousness. I can see that. But at the same time, holy shit, I'd be so nervous. But I think they're doing pretty well considering, because, you know, think about it, they're all like 23 or, you know, down to 19. So they're pretty young.
And you can sort of see, I mean, as they start to sing, it feels at first like, you know, they're a bit reserved. But it feels like as soon as the harmonies start working, they get a bit of confidence, and Katie's sort of there. She feels almost like she's sort of leading them and like making sure everyone's smiling, because she said in an earlier scene, like, if you smile while you're singing, it actually comes through in your in your tone of voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's yeah. such a well-known thing for like voiceovers and everything too. If you do smile, it sounds better, and you know, you can hear the smile in your voice.
Yeah.
And you know, I think Tiffany makes a mention just before this moment of, you know, you know, she hasn't had much experience singing with. This is the first time singing with a girl's a cappella, and you know, when you think about it, I mean, she's sung in pubs and stuff. You know, that's one of her part-time jobs. So she's obviously quite capable of singing live to people, and they all are. But I'm sure singing live together for a song that they've never really heard before. It's not like, you know, you've got instant recall. Like if you were going to sing Locomotion, for example, I guess, you know, in their mind, they're thinking, well, this bloke's paid for this song. We better make sure it sounds good. And you're right. Katie does really take the lead. I noticed that she goes and, you know, hits a key for them to all, you know, pitch themselves from on some hideous little battery-operated keyboard, which I thought was hilarious.
The Casio.
That probably has one of those little demo buttons that plays.
Imagine if she'd played that.
Yeah, that plays like an instrumental version of Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go or something.
Yeah. I had that exact keyboard with Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go on it.
Me too.
I used to love it.
Me too. I loved it so much. But I love that she just like, she goes and presses like, you know, this little key, and then they all like pitch themselves off it, this awful thing.
So yeah, it's that weird thing where singers are trying to like all find the same note and they're not quite hitting it.
Yeah. I think the benefit being, you know, that it starts with two of them singing. I think it's Tiffany and Sally that sort of start and they kind of lead it in. And then, you know, I think it does kind of become quite, you know, effortless and exciting, and does kind of ramp up in enthusiasm for them.
Yeah, and you're right, like, sure they've done it in the recording studio, but they're doing it part by part, and this is, like, their first time sort of performing it to someone, five-part. But
you would know too. I mean, singing something a cappella or, you know, it's usually, or acoustically, it's usually a different arrangement, and that's what this is too. You can hear that some of the notes are different, some of the actual, you know, the way that the phrasing is done in the actual song, how they're singing a cappella, is different to how it is in the ultimate one that they've clearly already recorded, which is the version we know today. So,
yeah.
You know, you can hear some bits like Katie's really cool, you know, kind of trill and Sophie's little trill, you can get those. But a couple of notes, there's some bits that Belinda sings that are not in the final recording that are clearly just for this a cappella performance, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, hang on, God, these girls have learnt this new song, they've recorded this song, and then they're told they have to sing it a different way and a cappella with no backing music in an office for the head of the label. I mean, there's probably a lot going on for these people,
yeah.
I would say.
But, I mean, having said that, as soon as it sort of gets into it, I don't know about you, but I just started to get tingles. Like, it was exciting to hear them just nail it, like singing it with. That's the thing about a cappella. Like, it can be awkward when you're trying to find your note and stuff like that. But once it starts working, there's something really amazing about just hearing a few human voices sort of making this amazing bit of music, I think.
Totally. I 110% agree with you, because it's this incredible talent, you know, to be able to pitch yourself through your ears to other humans. It's not, you know, it's not like an instrument that's been man-made or manufactured or tuned. It literally is, you know, your own instrument that you have developed and created and tuned yourself. It's in you. And to be able to take that something that's internal and, you know, pitch notes and harmonize off of other people's instrument is just wildly incredible. And I think people that roll their eyes at a cappella, or people that roll their eyes at, you know, choral singing in that space, I think they don't really truly understand or appreciate how technically brilliant it is.
Yeah.
It's really incredible. And when they do get going in this, you know, rendition of Poison, you know, it really was sort of a hair standing up on end moment of like, oh my God, they're just so good and it's just so great. And actually, it's funny because you know how you mentioned Scandalous earlier in this episode? I actually thought of them at this point when the girls are standing around singing Poison, and I actually thought of Scandalous thinking they just weren't as good. That's the thing.
Right.
Like, I mean, there's no disrespect to anyone that was in Scandalous. Well, perhaps we'll put some disrespect on them in the next series of Pretty Alexia, but at the moment, no, none intended. What I mean is, you know, when you kind of watch these five girls in Bardot sing now in this moment, you're kind of like, they really were great. All of them were great. And yeah, it's just kind of, you know, ultimately, and we'll talk about it later, but ultimately kind of the trajectory that kind of happened with the band and what's happened with them all since, it's pretty shitty really, because they're all such talented people.
And I wonder, I mean, it'd be so fascinating to know how much money was piled into this and how much was piled into Scandalous and like all the sort of goings on at the top level, because, yeah, it feels like there must have been some, like there's just something else going on that we don't know about and that we can't know as distant observers, because you're right, like they all were very good and talented and something doesn't quite make sense there, you know.
100% agree with you. Yeah. Something does, you know, something does not add up. 100 million percent. And that's kind of the thing I think that's certainly the part that I want to know and I want to understand better. And I think that's the big question mark, the elephant in the room that everybody wants to know, I think, is, you know, what really went wrong? What happened? Why did it end the way it did? And how did it get to that point? And, you know, how did it get to the point where all of them just kind of went their way that they did? It's really, really strange because they're all so great.
Yeah. So we've just not, hit the
that
little,
wasn't a great segue.
I know, we've just hit the little segue problem again because I was reading my note and going.
Okay, just want to clarify, you've hit the segue problem. I don't have any problem with it. So the way to segue to this particular bit that you're about to talk about is.
Go ahead, yeah. What people don't understand though is I have to segue because otherwise you'll talk for about 3 hours.
I'll piss off. Fuck off. I'll tell you what. Fuck. I've got to give the people what they want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right.
So, on that brilliant segue.
So, we're going to start. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. You want me to segue into, you know, talking about the names of the band that they keep talking about. You know, we've talked about Supernova and we've talked about, you know, Frock, which is such a stupid name. But terrible, then, you know, Belinda, you know, she keeps pushing this name Kismet, which is the only name we've heard in the previous two episodes as well. I think she mentioned it to Jackie O walking through an underground car park at one point, which is so fucking strange. And she mentioned it somewhere else. And Belinda clearly is so hardcore for this band named Kismet. And I think it must have had a bit of traction because they mentioned it a couple of episodes ago. They've mentioned it several times. I don't know if it was just to kind of throw us off the scent. And, you know, I don't know if it was genuinely like a contender. But then, you know, they've got some other ones. Like I think, what were some of the other ones they had? Didn't Sophie come out with Porn Stars?
Yeah.
Like, oh, Porn Stars would be quite cool, but I don't think that's going to work because this is a G-rated show.
Yeah. And I sort of want to give Sophie the benefit of the doubt. Like there's another bit actually where she's talking about she doesn't watch film clips, she just watches cartoons.
Yeah.
And I sort of like, you know, when Paris Hilton came out and she was doing The Simple Life and stuff like that and she was sort of playing a specific character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really want to give Sophie the benefit of the doubt too because I can't tell how much of it. She doesn't come across as the brightest spark in this particular episode and I can't tell how much she's playing up to the camera with that character, because like when she says porn stars, she's kind of got a bit of a like cheeky look in her eye, sort of going, I know this isn't going to fly. But
I mean, I think she's got a great sense of humor. That's the first thing. But I also wonder, I mean, here I'm, you know, here is a very deep, serious question to pose to you. You know, if she hadn't already earlier in the series performed Happy Birthday, Mr. President, and we didn't know that she was playing Marilyn Monroe at Movie World as a job, and if she wasn't blonde and if she wasn't always dressed in low-cut tops, would it matter if she said something sort of silly and a bit dippy as much? Would we think that she was sort of a dumb blonde if it, like, you know what I mean? Would it be so strikingly dumb, or would it be like, oh, how funny, lol, porn stars? Even to this day, the Marilyn Monroe thing follows her around, I would imagine. I would imagine. I mean, I don't know, but I would imagine it does. I think after Bardot and after various bits and pieces, I think she even played Marilyn Monroe in a telly movie for America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have some vague record. Again, this is one of my weird recollections. I can't actually confirm or deny, but I'm usually right, as you know. And I think maybe she did play Marilyn Monroe. So I think, you know, it's kind of followed her through her career, which has been great because it's helped her, but at the same time perhaps hindered her. So I don't know. Maybe there is an element of being a bit dippy, but I think also super funny. I think that's part of what we're seeing. All these kind of little weird quippy kind of puns just sort of roll off the tongue, but quite naturally and in a bit of like an endearing, dorky kind of way, you know?
Yeah, I think that's it. That's probably the nail on the head there. It's like endearing and a bit dorky, which is sort of counterintuitive, I think, for someone who's going to be a pop star. Like,
yes, totally.
Were any of the Spice Girls a bit dorky? I don't think so.
No.
They had it all worked out.
But then again, you know, this can come back to editing. As I said, I think earlier in our series of Fruity Alexia, I've spoken about how I think it was very primitive reality television, and we've spoken about how the editing was done on the fly, we think, if that's what it seems like. But I wonder if by this point, you know, as I've talked about a couple of times today in this episode, you know, the editing of Tiffany in this episode, I wonder if they're starting to kind of, you know, mold these characters and these caricatures of these people to be characters. You know, maybe there is sort of an angle that's being pushed for Sophie and for Tiffany and for whoever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right. And I mean, the next scene where they're having their hair all done, I think they're actively sort of talking about the characters. And yeah, I do have to give you 10 points because was one memory you had about Belinda's caramel highlights. And I think pretty much spot on, there it was, talking about Belinda's caramel hair.
Do you know what? when this moment happened, when I watched the episode just earlier today, I was like, please, please, don't let me be wrong. Please let me have remembered that there was some talk of like caramel highlights and like chunks of caramel in her hair or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, when I watched it, I let out an audible like, yes. Like I was like, yes. You know, I may as well have been watching like a cricket match. You know, yeah. I was like, yes. I was so pleased with myself to have remembered this. It's kind of like people remember their favorite grand finals, you know, AFL grand finals from many years ago. I remember my favorite moments from TV shows from many years ago.
I don't know what it is about caramel highlights that would be like a, you know, a grand final winning goal kick thing.
Yeah, well, I remembered them, so whatever. Yeah. It basically is the same thing. And I think, you know, you're so right. Like, it's interesting to hear, like, this, the hair thing is such a weird moment. Like, it gets a lot of time in this episode.
It does. There's a bit about Katie shaving her hair that they're sort of focusing on quite a bit.
Also, why do you think they ask her to shave her head? Is it because she's already got short hair? Because I actually really like her. Well, you know, I like her kind of, you know, short kind of Annie Lennox vibes, this fabulous kind of cropped hair that she has. I don't know why they're trying to get her to shave her head. Is it because she turned up in a pleather jumpsuit to one of the auditions or something?
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing.
I mean, my guess was just that they're trying to make the characters really extreme so that you know who's who.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But why are they picking her? Is it just because she's got the short hair? I mean, on the other end, they're saying they want to make Tiffany's hair longer. Why don't they want to shave Tiffany's head and they want to give Katie long hair? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't know if it was just like clearly she's happy to do stuff like
do anything,
that. So
yeah.
Imagine posing that to any of the others, they'd say no straight away, but like it's a good look and maybe Katie's the one who might go for her.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, yeah. I do think it would be a fucking stupid idea to see a pop group with one of them with a shaved head.
Oh, I thought it would have been good.
Would have looked so fucking ridiculous. Although she would have looked great on that album cover. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. But otherwise, no, how fucking stupid.
She turns up with, you know, the... Is it a pixie cut? Is that what it's called? I can't remember.
It's quite pixie cut-like. It's a little bit like Mia Farrow, yeah.
And it's sort of got like zigzags cut into the front of it. And then she sort of gives us like three options. You know, you can have the zigzag down, then you can have the messy look, and then you can have the, you know, red carpet look where she sort of spikes one bit up and, you know, pastes a fringe off to
which
the side.
Which is literally the kind of hair that I had when I used to go out to gay bars when I was younger.
Was it? Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I had had big chunks of blonde in my hair, which is probably why I burnt it all out, and that's why I don't have any of it left.
Not the fire engine red.
No, not fire engine red. And I had that slick down fringe and spiked up at the back. It was very much a look. And now I think Karens everywhere have copied that look. The Karen haircut of today was the gay boy's haircut of 20 years ago.
Was it? I'll have to. I'm not on Twitter enough to know what a Karen looks like. So. And there's a shot at the end of this little scene. And first of all, are you proud of me for not mentioning Clueless while they're having a makeover done?
Well, you haven't mentioned it yet. I'm not proud of you until we haven't mentioned it. But you've just done it. So
too late.
I'm not so proud.
Yeah. Anyway, at the end of this sort of montage bit, there's this awkward shot where the for no apparent reason, like there's no voiceover, no editorializing, no point. They just sort of zoom in on Katie's cleavage.
Yep. It's so fucking strange.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like it before. Yeah.
It lingers and it's so weird. It's like that shot last week of Sophie trying on the pink glittery halter neck top, and you can hear all the people talking, but the actual shot is of Sophie's cleavage in this top. That's what fills the screen. It's like whoever these camera people are need to stop filming these young women's breasts.
Yeah.
And whoever's editing it and directing it and putting it together and producing it, stop doing this. It's so weird. It's just really creepy. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. It's weird.
Yeah. It's funny that it was just okay at the time as well. But, I mean, went and watched a few, like, 80s movies, like some of my old favorites. And it's amazing just how much you sort of took for granted at that time. And it's really interesting. Like, Bill and Ted, like, there's all this homophobic jokes and same with, like, Teen Wolf and stuff like that. And he's just like, were we just nodding at this and going, oh, yeah, this is fine, you know?
Well, pretty much. I mean, that's kind of the way with everything. But at the same time, I mean, that's the beauty of doing something like this podcast, is being able to have a look at, you know, things back through the lens of today, kind of being like, oh, my God, that was just so fucked.
I mean, by now, pop stars, you know, in the context of the documentary, pop stars is well and truly out there. People seem to know who the band all are, and they're getting a lot of media attention. And there's a bit where they're being interviewed by Andrew Denton, and I was kind of going, he was great. Yeah. Whatever happened to him? I mean, maybe he's still out and about and doing stuff, and I just don't watch TV anymore. But yeah, he's in the studio at one of the, I can't remember which radio station it is.
I think it's Triple M.
Triple M, right.
I think. With Amanda Keller, yeah, I think so.
And they're, you know, asking some hilarious questions.
I don't think they're hilarious.
Well, it was quotation marks hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Sorry. That was just a bad delivery of your line there, yeah, of your joke. But, yes, so I see what you're saying. Like, so in terms of being hilarious questions, I thought they were such shit fucking questions. Amanda Keller asks one question, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but feel free to go and watch the episode so you can see it. Amanda Keller says, let's ask you some questions, you know, something to the effect of, so we can see if you're going to be successful or not, if you're going to make it as pop stars. So, you know, Amanda Keller poses this hypothetical point, and she goes, it's PMT week in the pop stars household. You know, is it a tampon commercial of women dancing around a fire hydrant in the rain, or is it B, covered in chocolate wrappers?
Yeah, a bear pit covered in chocolate wrappers, yeah.
A bear pit covered in chocolate wrappers. And, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of torn about this, because part of me is like, oh, no, honey, no, don't. Like, why would you – you wouldn't pose that question to men, right? And so here's the – I've got a two-part issue with this. The first one is, you would not have posed that issue – to NSYNC or to Human Nature or to any kind of other man, you know, oh, what's it like at 7 a.m. in the Human Nature household? Have you all got boners? Do you know what I mean? They wouldn't have. If Justin Timberlake and NSYNC came on, it wouldn't be like, what's it like?
You caught me off guard there.
What's it like at 7 a.m. on the NSYNC tour bus? Do you all just have morning wood and wank each other off? You know, is it like a gay porn movie from SeanCody.com, or is it actually where you all dance around a fire hydrant in the rain? I mean, you just wouldn't ask these questions. But having said that, I'm all about period positivity and talking about periods and, you know, making it okay for people to talk about periods. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But let's be honest. 20 years ago, that's not what was happening in that moment.
No, it's true.
That's not what that was about.
Also, the thing I thought about that, though, was they're sort of on Andrew Denton and Amanda Keller's home grounds there. So, and those two sort of...
Yeah, they're the victim of this moment. The power dynamic is not fair.
It's true. In the context of comedy, though, I feel like those two came from the alternative comedy movement where, you know, back in the 70s, all comedians, like, and this is in Britain particularly, all comedians sort of shared the same jokes around. And it was all like, oh, my wife, and, you know, it was all like really sexist and racist and stuff like that.
Sure,
and then this
sure.
alternative comedy movement came around, and that was really trying to get rid of all that stuff. And, you know, although it was really driven by, you know, men, and, you know, the Young Ones was a big part of it, and, you know, the Doug Anthony All-Stars in Australia.
Yeah.
There was still this bit of, you know, we've got to be a bit naughty, and we can't come up with jokes that people have told before. Like, it has to be all our own original stuff. And someone like Amanda Keller, you know, you'd just be mining your own experience, I think, for comedy rather than trying to fit in.
Look, I agree. And I just want to clarify, I actually really like Amanda Keller. Yeah. I really like Amanda Keller, and I really like Andrew Denton. I actually really, really like both of them. So, but I just think, and I just think it's a, you know, that joke and that question posed to those young women was a product of the time. It doesn't make it okay because of when it was, and it doesn't make it okay that it was asked at all. It just, I can acknowledge that it was a product of the time, and I'm sure there was no ill intent meant on the part of Amanda Keller. But, you know, can you imagine having, you know, these young women, I mean, they've already started this set off by joking that, you know, today the world is at your doorsteps, but last week not even your parents knew who you were. They had to put post-its on your forehead to remember your names. That was how it started.
I thought that was good. That gave me a bit of a chuckle.
No, it gave me a chuckle too. Yeah. But what I mean is, you know, the power dynamic is just not there. It's not like, you know, a big pop star being interviewed by a radio shock jock. It's complete strangers, virtual nobodies at this point, being interviewed by big professionals. And you know that the people listening at home, the Triple M listeners or whoever, whatever radio station it was, they're not sitting there kind of going, oh, cute young girls. Oh, ha, ha. They're kind of going, oh, yeah, can you imagine what it would be like if they did all have their periods at the same time? It's just kind of gross. And it's like, you know, I totally understand that, you know, comedy changes and comedy should be provocative. And I actually really like it. And I don't like being too politically correct. But I just kind of think, you know, especially for a show like this that really had that demographic glued, you know, the demographic of young women, young girls glued to it every week, you know, it's just kind of a bit of a bummer, really, because not only did Amanda Keller think it was okay to say on air and air it to all of their listeners every day, wherever that radio station show aired, but also the people at Channel 7 and whoever produced the show felt it was okay to air it and put those girls on the spot. I don't know. I just was kind of icked by it. And I actually think a lot of people probably rewatching it today would be a bit icked by it. You know, but if we had a conversation today where it was a, you know, a totally open conversation about, you know, about periods, no worries, wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't have a problem with it. But it's just the way that it was kind of done and why. It had no relevance, really. I thought it was weird. And then I think Andrew Denton asks another question. He's like, if you were meeting Prince Charles, you know, what body part of his would you grope? I think this is in reference to Prince Charles having his bum pinched by Jerry Halliwell from the Spice Girls, right. I think. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I think that's what happened. I assume that's why he's asking the joke. But then, you know, I think he asks Sally and Sally kind of, you know, says his ears, ha, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And I thought it was
a good response.
It was a cute response.
You picked out something that's punching up, I reckon. You're making fun of Prince Charles's ears. That's like classic. She's met the challenge.
Totally punching up. But then one of them, I think it's Andrew Denton, says, oh, you wouldn't go for the crown jewels? Like that's punching that up back down. You know, Sally's kind of turned it around. I mean, in this moment, Sally's the professional. She's gone, oh, his ears? And then Andrew Denton kind of goes, you wouldn't go for the crown jewels? That's like, bam, slam dunk you, nobody, new girl, back into your fucking corner. I don't know. I do love Andrew Denton and Amanda Keller, so don't get me wrong, but I just felt, ugh. And by no stretch of the imagination, were they the worst people that would have interviewed those young women? And I think they're excellent, excellent broadcasters. I just want to make that really, really clear, but I think this was just an icky moment for me in hindsight.
Well, one day, Andrew Denton, if you're lucky, we'll have you on.
not after this. He's probably like, fuck that gay guy for taking me so seriously. Fucking get a grip, mate, is probably what he's thinking.
Now, there's a big chunk later in the app where they're talking about getting their first film clip done. So clearly it's for Poison, and they've brought in the music clip director whose name I have forgotten.
Oh, Mark Hartley.
Mark Hartley, yeah. Do we know Mark Hartley from anything?
Well, we do by way of Googling him. So did we know him before? No. Do we know him now? Yes. And will our listeners know him after this? Indeed they will. Mark Hartley, prior to doing the film clip for Bardot for Poison, he had already immediately worked with Meryl Bainbridge, UMI, John Farnham and Human Nature. I think he had worked with Boom Crash Opera, a whole bunch of really cool people. I think that's actually why I was singing Peter Andre at the beginning of our podcast today, because I think maybe he did a Peter Andre clip,
right.
If my memory serves me correctly. That would explain the Peter Andre moment earlier.
Yeah.
And then I think after doing the Poison video clip, he even did, you know, some of Sophie's solo singles. And then he went on to do some really great documentaries. And I think he even won an actor award, which at the time was called an AFI award. And it was, I forget, Alex, what is the name of the documentary? It's about the Ozploitation.
Oh, yes, this one. So the I think it's Not Quite Hollywood.
And that's right, yeah, Not Quite Hollywood.
Yeah. It's they're sort of interviewing people like Quentin Tarantino about this, you know, golden age of Australian cinema, which was sort of the exploitation, you know, 70s you think going through to 80s period.
You say it's a great documentary and I should go and watch it, so I will do that.
Big recommend, yeah. Yeah, okay. For any movie buffs, if you're Australian and you're a movie buff, you know, you'll love it, I reckon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, what was his name again? You know,
Mark Hartley.
That's it, Mark Hartley. He's clearly been brought in because, you know, he's the expert. But I thought Belinda seems to be, you know, in a few of the little cutscene things that they've got, she seems to be driving it and having a lot of the ideas, I think.
Well, this is probably part of her creative mindset. I mean, this is the person who's gone on. You know, she's gone to be an interior designer. I know we keep talking about it and we haven't actually seen any of her interior design work, so maybe we probably shouldn't say anything. So. But that's true. It is all in Singapore.
Yeah.
Singaporeans have very high standards, so I'm sure Belinda was, you know, performing at very high standards. But
yeah,
I think, you know, she's probably got a really great creative mindset. Plus, she's 24 at this time, so she's lived a little bit more than the others. You know, the others, a lot of them have just come from home. You know, she's been living out of home and stuff. So that's probably part of it. A bit more confidence in herself and style.
Yeah. And there's this weird bit that, I mean, it's quite choppy this episode, which is why we're jumping around a bit. But there's a weird bit after this where they're sort of talking about the music and, you know, will they be able to prove themselves as musicians and not just being, you know, this manufactured
pop stars, yeah.
And it's sort of bookended by, you know, Tommy Farragher, the guy who was producing a couple of their songs. They're all sat on a couch and he's there in front of them in the studio sort of dancing. And he's dancing along to one of the songs. Every time one of their lines comes up, he's sort of pointing at them. And I'm sure it felt great to be Tommy Farragher in that moment, but he sure looked like a bit of a goose.
He really did. And you know what I think is really weird? And I could be wrong about this. So the song that is playing back, so it's just to clarify, it's the girls sitting in the studio. They're not singing. They're actually just sitting on a couch listening to their own recording playback.
Yeah.
And Tommy Farragher is dancing to the playback, pointing at the girls when they would have been singing that line. And it's a song called Down, which appears on the first Bardo album, which I fucking love, by the way, and can't wait to break down when we talk about the album in future episode of Fruity Alexia. But Tommy Farragher, I don't think he even actually produced that song. I could be wrong, but I don't think he was a producer on that song. He was just dancing away to some song.
It's just like dancing to it.
It was just so weird. But I mean, Tommy Farragher, if you're out there, let us know. What was it all about? What were you feeling in that moment? I mean, he was feeling himself in that moment. He was really feeling himself. But good on him.
Yeah. And he'd grown a little goatee since we last met him, I think. Yeah,
good on him.
Yeah. So that sort of happens. And then they jump back to deciding on the name. And Katie suggests and the narrator, something like Isis.
Yeah, so this is the point where the narrator kind of says, oh, look, that the girls might be, you know, be seen as manufactured, but they have all the freedom and control, you know, over what they wear and how they're perceived and how they look and the name. And Katie suggests Isis, which I think we can all, you know, reflect on now with the benefit of hindsight and say, well, that was probably a good idea.
Dodged a bullet Isis. There. Actually, yeah, can we say so dodged too. A bullet in relation to Isis? That's probably insensitive.
Don't think we can.
Okay.
Don't think
let's move on. Quick, move on, quick.
But it's interesting because from the very beginning, through all these different choppy bits that they're talking about the different names, right, they, you know, they cut back and forth about the name suggestions. I think they're thinking they're being pretty clever, the editor, whoever it is. And what I noticed is from the very beginning, you've got kind of let's just hypothetically say Belinda, you get a shot of Belinda saying Kismet and then a shot of Tiffany saying no. Then you get a shot, literally just no. Then you get a shot of Katie saying supernova. Then you get a shot of Tiffany saying no. And it's this kind of playful edit of throughout the episode spliced with other moments like talking about the music video or getting their hair done. And every now and again, one of the girls will make a name up like porn star and then you cut to Tiffany saying no.
No.
And it's just this continuous no, no, no from Tiffany, which is, you know, may well have been her opinion on them all, but the way that it's edited and produced in the final, you know, package that's been pulled together just kind of makes her look like a bit of a negative bitch, really.
Yeah. It's funny.
I felt it anyway.
Yeah, I don't remember. You know how I've pretty much forgotten everything from, you know, last Tuesday?
Yep, pretty much.
The things I do remember from pop stars are sort of people's personas, and actually that side of Tiffany didn't stick in my head, I don't think. So yep. I don't think it's something that's kind of stuck with her, but for this particular episode, it does feel like they're pulling out bits where she's being particularly negative, and I can't work out like what it's serving. Like if there's just nothing, like I said at the beginning, I didn't feel like there was much drama in this episode. So maybe they needed to find the one person who's doing something that is going against the grain, so they have a bit of a narrative. But it feels like it doesn't have much.
Do you really think so? See, I think looking back on it, I actually think I think Tiffany did cop a raw deal in the editing of Pop Stars. I think she also copped a raw deal in the press after Butto folded. Yeah, I mean, even like last year when they were talking about their, you know, doing their reunion, their anniversary, not the reunion. You know, I think there was still some, you know, moments of, you know, former Butto band member Tiffany Wood takes a swipe at Sophie Monk and all this other stuff and yada, right. Yada, yada. So I think there was a narrative at the time that I recall, and I think certainly perhaps kind of maybe unfairly existed. You know, when you think about this episode, there's, and I'm just really surmising here, so, you know, perhaps other people will have viewed them differently. But, you know, there's the constant editing and insertion of these no bits about the band name from Tiffany. Then you get her, you know, she doesn't look super happy about having hair extensions. The stylists talk to her about her outfits and how they want her to wear gold with pink, and she says, nah, I won't wear gold. And she refuses to wear gold, and she stands up, she puts her outfit on, and she's not super happy about it. She won't wear what they want her to wear. She knows what she wants to look like. And there's a little bit later where they talk about her setup, and she's talking, you know, how none of it is how I wanted it. And I feel like there is actually just this constant thread through the episode of, like, she's being difficult, which, I don't know, I mean, the chick's been around for like a hot second. Everyone needs to calm the fuck down and give her some breathing space.
Yeah, and she's been working double time trying to make up for all the stuff Chantal had already done.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is the thing. She's been working so hard. I don't know. I feel like she got a bum edit, and I would love to speak to Tiffany and get her opinion, her side on it, because
yeah, we need justice for her. Right?
I think so too. Yeah. I really, really do. I really do think we need justice for Tiffany.
Yeah. I do love, so they sort of get printouts of the set, and it's like being faxed to them, like these hand-done drawings, and you can't work out what the hell is going on.
Isn't that the funniest thing? Like they have not even coloured images to look at their set storyboarding. It's literally black and white fax or computer printouts of these awful little black and white pictures.
Yeah. But what's even better about that bit is there's a bit of tension growing between Chris and Michael. You know, why wasn't the designer in the room, and sort of the pecking order becomes clear. And this is where Chris drops his expletive and, you know, Michael's sort of there backpedaling a bit.
Well, it's interesting because in this moment I was thinking, okay, this is where Chris is throwing his balls around. And you know why? Because he is the record label. Ultimately, they're footing the bill for this. And he actually says at this point, you can hear Michael and, you know, I think Chris is talking to Tiffany about the fuck up with her set design. And I think Michael is off camera somewhere. You can hear him in the background talking on the phone. And Chris Moss says, is that Grant on the phone? We'll bring him into this because we need to talk and sort this out. As in, is that Grant from Grant Thomas Management?
Right, yeah.
As in, bring him in, we got to sort this shit out. And I think, as you say, that's when he's bleeped. And it actually really speaks, I think, to the disharmony that's really starting to show between the label, the management company, and potentially the band. You know, I think Chris makes a really good point. You know, why are the stylists and creatives selecting outfits for people, wardrobes for people, when they haven't actually delivered on the other part of the flip of the coin with the sets? You know, what are they going to do to turn up and be dressed in these outfits and have to make it work? And actually, you know, in later years, we know that Butto and I think Warner Music, I could be wrong on this and it's a legal thing, so I don't necessarily want to put my claim to it, but, you know, they end up suing Grant Thomas Management for, you know, neglecting their, or maybe Grant Thomas Management sues Warner. Somebody sues somebody. I'm not too sure. Somebody sues somebody, and it's about not making the most of the band and the girls and leveraging the success.
Oh,
and
I was wondering to this.
Yeah. So I've just, again, some vague recollection of this. I haven't got any detail because, as I say, it's just a weird memory. But I think this is really a little moment where we're seeing this disharmony. Yeah.
What I mean, the subtext I was getting from Chris Moss, like what he wanted to say was, Michael, you're the manager. Manage it. Because he comes in and he's like, Chris sort of goes, so what's going to happen? We're going to turn up to the shoot on Saturday and like we're going to have outfits that the girls haven't even tried on or something. And yep. Michael kind of is going, oh, you know, well, I was just on the phone to the director. And Chris shuts him off and goes, that's the director. He's just going to put his camera on whatever's there yep. at the time, you know. And you can really feel the frustration of, Michael, this is your gig. Don't, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think, I think that's even quite a kind way of talking about it. I mean, I've had my own times, you know, where I've had lots of people that I've managed and, you know, I have those moments too, you know. It's one of those, you know, this is your job. Do your job. You know, don't give me excuses, give me solutions. And if I were the head of a label or if I was the head of a project for a label like the Popstars project at the time, where they'd invested all this money into buying album, buying songs, buying studio time, paying editors and producers and songwriters and audio technicians and, you know, doing deals with New Idea and doing deals with, you know, radio stations, doing deals with television networks, and we know that some of that is paid. You know, some of that is contra, and some of that is paid from record labels, and always has been since the beginning of record labels existing. There's a lot of money riding on the success of this, and if you've got somebody that you don't feel is kind of, you know, using their nous or using their smarts or using their skill or their experience or their position, in this case, clearly he's got this problem with Michael, I'd be fucking pissed.
Yeah,
I'd be like, hard pass, Michael. Next. I'd be like kicking him out the door.
Yeah, like as if, you know, I've already delegated this. Didn't think I'd be having to deal with this.
Yep. And I don't want to have to look at it again. You're in charge. Make it happen. Make it work. Don't piss off the girls. And there's one really good point where I think Chris is sitting around the table saying, look, I think the one we really have to revisit is Tiffany's one, you know, and he kind of basically backs Tiffany and says, you know, you're right. It's not anything you asked for. We're going to get you what you want, draw what you want. And she sketches on a little bit of paper what she wants.
Yeah. And it's funny. I had to go back and watch the Poison film clip to remind myself what, you know, what each person is sort of set in and what Tiffany ends up with. And I'm sure there's more about this in future episodes, but it looks like, you know, when she got rejected and Chris Moss is sitting there on the futon with her
like
5 episodes ago, it looks like her apartment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like they've scrubbed down the walls. They've like distressed the walls and made it look like a shabby little sort of Surrey Hills one bedroom.
My memory of the Poison clip is that her setup is a little bit more like some kind of, Mexican sort of hacienda kind of, you know, dirty maybe. Walls, no windows, you know, kind of like somewhere like a sort of an isle, maybe like a South American, you know, location, a shack, you know, sort of slightly shipwrecked or something. I don't know. That's the vibe I got from, but I haven't seen it for a long time.
You're probably right. I probably just misread it because I just thought it would be. I was like, there she is sitting on a like bed again when she should be sitting on a chair.
I think it's interesting.
Get some furniture, Tiffany.
I think it's interesting she's pushing so hardcore for a goldfish. I think that's a bit strange. But anyway, it was probably a trend at the time. I don't know, goldfish in music videos.
Yeah.
Bit weird. But I think she also talks about, you know, she refers, you know, to wanting crystals and, you know, she wanted lots of fabric and, you know, it kind of sounds like she wanted something to be a relaxed, you know, bit of a hippy dippy kind of, you know, chakra kind of vibe.
Coloured starfish stuck to the door.
Yeah. Dream catches everywhere probably.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I was thinking, perhaps that's the kind of person that she is as a person now even as well. We'll find out. I'm going to find Tiffany Wood. We're going to find out.
And the final scene, they're in a big boardroom and I sort of thought, this is where it becomes really clear that it's just like this is a business, not an artistic endeavor.
Because
it's like a boardroom and, you know, there's the head of marketing sitting there and the, you know, the PR interns beside and there's sort of all these
every single person,
people with their clipboard and their information folder in front of them. And it's supposed to be this big moment, like this momentous TV moment where, first of all, the band name is revealed. And secondly, we hear, you know, poison for the first time. And sort of neither of those things really happen. Like, first of all, Chris goes to put on the CD and there's a technical issue and
yeah. it
gets really awkward. And then, like, he just says the name Bardo, like, in casual conversation.
Just casually, like, oh, it's been decided.
Yeah, it's been decided.
It's weird.
Yeah, and then the sort of band is standing there in the back corner just sort of awkwardly, and like to break the tension they're sort of pretending to strum along. It was such an awkward scene to watch, and you just went, really, oh god, this is probably what happens all the time. Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I kind of watched it thinking the same thing, thinking this is legit how this must be all the time for performers and music artists. You know, they come into these boardrooms and all of a sudden they present their creativity is confronted by dollars and by businessmen in suits or business people in suits. And, you know, it's this moment of reality of like, it's not actually about the work. It's about the money.
Yeah.
Not that I don't think Pop Stars wasn't about the money from the very beginning, because I think there's a point in this episode where the narrator talks about how they've got to meet lots of different sponsors who all want to have their brands associated with the pop stars, with the girls. And, you know, there's these various business people and they look like they're sort of, you know, work with some kind of, you know, internet browser or something, I think. I don't know. Whatever product they were spruiking, it looked like some kind of, you know, early version of like, you know, Yahoo or whatever that thing used to be. Or what was that thing called?
MySpace.
Yeah, any of that kind of thing. And then, you know, getting the girls to do all this naff kind of stuff is this little weird montage where they're putting their face on everything. And, you know, I guess at this point it's starting to seem super, super real because their names are out in the public by now.
Yeah.
It's too late to back out now, girls. You know what I mean? And it's getting really real. The single release is coming. Here you are in this room with these people in this boardroom. Better sink or it's a sink or swim and you better not sink kind of thing.
Yeah. Better end sink or swim.
Oh, God.
Another good segue. Because the reason I say that is because there's like one guy who's talking about an appearance at like a Westfield or something like that.
I love
this. And he's saying, you know what, last time, the last band that was there was NSYNC and they had 3,000 people. So, you know, things are getting real.
I thought that was such a weird mention. It was obviously just to mention NSYNC, obviously.
Right. Are they Warner Music artists?
I presume.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know, but
who came out? Is that Justin Timberlake?
Justin Timberlake.
Yes, I got something right. Did you see that, everyone? I got it right.
I mean, to be fair, they all are from NSYNC, have gone on to do their own things, but Justin Timberlake's the one you'd know.
Yeah. Who are the others?
Lance Bass. He's the gay guy who's gone on to be a television host and does a bit of acting, does a bit of whatever. Right. JC Chazé, I don't know what he does now. No. I think he had a couple of solo singles or maybe one solo single. There's Joey Fatone. He was a TV host. I think he still is. He hosts like Red Carpets and he does like, you know.
Isn't he from another one?
New Kids in the
Backstreet
Block.
Backstreet Boys? No, Backstreet Boys.
Backstreet Boys Joey isn't Fatone? Joey.
No.
No, Joey Fatone is NSYNC. And then there's the other guy from NSYNC and I can't remember his name. Chris? Yeah. Maybe Chris?
Okay.
But I've made that up. To be honest, I've said Chris. It could not be Chris. I have no idea. But Backstreet Boys are completely different people again. I can't believe I have to tell you this. Actually, I can. Why am I surprised?
One of them is called AJ and then Nick Carter. I know more of the Backstreet Boys than I know of.
So you tell me now, who are the Backstreet Boys? So, what are their names?
Nick Carter, he's the one that he had the smaller brother, Aaron.
Aaron Carter. Oh, my God. We've got to talk about Aaron Carter in a minisode. Oh, my God. That's out of control. The stuff I found out recently about him, we've got to deal with this. All right.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Make a note. Then there's AJ.
Yep. Nick Carter and AJ. Yep.
Yep. Then there's Joey Fatone.
Nope, that was NSYNC.
Then one was Jerry Halliwell or something. No.
different, that's a Spice Girl.
Okay, and the last one was called...
So shit at this.
Was it a man? Was the other one a man?
They were called the Backstreet Boys, so I think it's pretty obvious.
So they're boys. He was called... I've got nothing. I'm at a loss.
You're at a loss. Yeah. Nick Carter, Brian, Luttrell, Kevin, AJ, and Howie.
Oh, Howie. Howie the Owie. I remember Howie the Owie. Don't you worry.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I'm not really that clueless in real life, I hope. But
I don't know. This is literally real life, so I don't know what you think this is.
No, we're playing characters, aren't we? I'm playing a character.
Aren't okay. We? Yes, yeah. Yes, we are. We are indeed. Yes.
Let's spread that rumor. But one thing, and I don't want to perpetuate any stereotypes by asking you this question, but something I never understood, and it's a phrase that comes up, is fashion victim. So they say Katie's a fashion victim, and I never quite know if that means she's into fashion or she doesn't know anything about fashion.
Do you know what? I think it is, firstly, of course, you don't understand what fashion victim is. That does not surprise me. But I think fashion victim in this context, they're using it as a bit of a dig, a bit of a slur, being a fashion victim. But actually, you know, there are a whole bunch of people who would use it in the other way, in the positive, you know. Oh, she's a victim for fashion, you know.
Oh, she's
a fashion victim. But then actually it's like, oh, what a fashion victim. Like roadkill, fashion roadkill.
Oh, so it's like a fashionista but with negative connotations.
It can be used either way. Like I would say it can be used either way. Like, you know, oh, she's such a fashion victim. She'll wear every, you know, new collection piece from every new designer. Or, oh, she's such a fashion victim. She has no fucking clue, which is what I think they're doing with Katie here.
Right. So it's a bit like being totally addicted to bass. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, wow. Yeah, basically. Me too. So good. So good.
Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
Did we clear it up? But I don't know. I think that's what they meant by it.
Yeah, I was just never sure if it meant like someone who was left behind by fashion.
It basically is. It can be that.
Oh, now I'm confused again. So like me, for instance, I do all my shopping at Uniqlo. Does that make me a fashion victim?
No, I don't think it makes you a fashion victim. I think how you put things together perhaps makes you a fashion victim.
Okay.
Nah,
whatever it is, fashion hasn't been kind to me over the years. So.
Or could you argue that you just haven't been kind to fashion? You haven't gotten – you know what it is? Being a fashion victim is somebody who maybe doesn't have an eye for fashion. It could be. But it could also be somebody who does have an eye for fashion. It could be used in either way.
Okay. Well, either way, I don't identify as a fashion victim, but definitely at some point fashion and I fell out and we haven't never really made up the ground.
I think that's fair. I don't know. You've always had your own sort of, you know, slovenly like, you know, fashion-y mystique, I would have thought. You know, you love an oversized sweater. You know, you love a scarf. You love fingerless gloves.
Yeah, I was described at university by someone as homeless chic.
But I think it works for you. Because you've got this lovely, shining, sunshiny, glittering personality that comes out underneath.
Oh, well, you know, isn't that nice of you to say?
So when we look down at you in the gutter playing away the drums on your little upturned milk crates, we actually just see your lovely personality. That's what it is. Clothes do not maketh the man.
Glad I can get my personality through my drumming. That's good. Through my bongos. Now, there was a lot in this episode. It's sort of about how they have control over what they're doing. They get to pick their set. They get to pick their costume. They get to pick the name of the band. And it sort of felt a bit token, and we really got a glimpse into the machine more than any other episode this time, I think.
I mean, I think, yes, definitely. I think it's starting to seem, at the time, I think it was probably watched with excitement. You know, we probably watched it kind of really being super excited about how, oh my gosh, we're seeing sort of behind the curtain. But really now watching it back, we know so much about manufactured pop music and music reality television programs and different things. You know, we hear about some of the inner workings of the music industry that kind of, you know, have been dragged into the public sphere. Like, for example, the Taylor Swift Scooter Braun fight. You know, so we hear about some of this stuff that perhaps otherwise we wouldn't have known about. So I think looking back on it, you can kind of see, oh, like the writing's on the wall here. This is all about money. It's like the McDonald's of music, really.
Yeah.
And I just want to clarify, that's not to say that the girls aren't talented and that, you know, they don't deserve the success they ended up having. I just think that's what it's starting to look like here.
Well, to keep that analogy going, like the cow doesn't know it's going to end up as a quarter pounder, does it? Is that what you mean?
Oh, fuck.
That's what you're saying.
Basically.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's what you mean.
Nope. That is exactly what I mean. That's exactly what I mean. Oh, that's so fucking awful, but yes. Yeah. So if you enjoy what we are putting out there into the world for you here on Fruity Lexia, we have an Instagram, so send us a DM. Hock us a loogie.
Hock us a loogie.
Hock us a loogie. Do you know what? Firstly, that's disgusting.
Do people still say that? I put this in as like some terminology from like 1998 that I thought was funny.
No, I don't think anyone says it. I remember it being a big thing in South Park, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think it was a big thing in South Park where they had like a competition because, you know, it was like who could do the best loogie. Oh, no, I've lied to you. It was Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
And we had a very early computer game, my sisters and I, where...
I was hoping you were going to say this.
Beavis and Butthead were on a...
Oh, okay.
Beavis and Butthead were on like the roof of an apartment building, and the competition was they had to hock a loogie down onto passers-by and hit the passers-by on the pavement below. That was actually the computer game.
I mean, this goes way beyond, you know, our demographic, but I was going to bring up a different computer game called Monkey Island 2 where there is literally a loogie hocking contest and it's set up like a long jump sort of thing, so you had to sort of get it over the line. But I think a lot of people have probably switched off now that I've talked about a pirate adventure game.
Probably. And also the fact that we're talking about hocking a loogie, which is gross.
Yeah, and what we really meant to say was, you know, like and subscribe, I think.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah.
Send us DMs. Let us know your thoughts. What do you think a fashion victim is? I think that's probably something we'd like to know. What does fashion victim mean to you?
I'm still a bit confused about that, but yeah. Are you a fashion victim?
I'm not a fashion victim. Go fuck yourself.
No, I meant world. Let us know. Are you a fashion victim?
Oh, world. It was like a, dear listener, are you a fashion victim? That's what you meant. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, let us know.
Yeah. And I was going to say send a photo, but that's such a fraught thing to say about the internet these days. So please don't send us any photos.
Oh, fuck that. Send us photos. I want to see. You're not going to read the DMs anyway. Let's be honest, it's only going to be me. Send us the photos. I'm so here for your fashion victimness.
Now, we have a little link in the description of all our podcasts where you can go to Acast and send us a little bit of cash just to say thank you for all this free content that we're giving you. And we're publishing shows every Friday with minisodes on Tuesdays.
That's true.
Yeah.
Twice a week, your double dose, double dose of Fruity Alexia.
What would you call the minisodes? In a nutshell.
I had somebody who said to me the other day that they really liked the idea of calling them cast-offs or the rejects because it sort of speaks to the whole show, you know, rejects of the show. And they liked the cast-offs thing.
So we've had one entrant in our competition. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah, but I don't think you're not a super fan of cast-offs, which is fine.
It's the word cast.
And I don't know. I don't think it has a great ring to it. Maybe rejects. Yeah.
The rejects?
I mean, I don't know, but rejects is kind of negative. Let's reclaim rejects.
Yeah.
Maybe we can reclaim it.
Like the reject shop.
Yeah, which I love. Oh, my God, I love the reject shop. Do you go to the reject shop?
I go nowhere at the moment. I'm having to knit my own socks, remember?
Okay. Good call. That's true. Well, I love the reject shop, so if you need anything, let me know. I'll get it and send it to you. I love a bargain store. I'm a sucker. If I can buy, like, you know, 60 toilet rolls for, like, $2, I'm so there.
We're not going to explain what chicken feed is to everyone, but anyone who knows what chicken feed is will know.
I think that you are doing everyone a disservice by not explaining it. But yes, we love chicken feed.
Oh, look at the time. We have to go.
R.I.P. chicken feed.
R.I.P. chicken feed. That's chicken feed.
Don't you love them?
Don't you love them? All right. On that cryptic note, for anyone who didn't grow up in Tasmania, bye.
See you later.
Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Can you for a good moment now?
Yeah, I was described at university by someone as homeless chic.
Yeah, I would say
and I don't think it was a compliment, yeah.
I would say gutter busker sheep, but
sheep.
I can't even speak. Gutter busker sheik. Try saying that quickly. Gutter busker sheik.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.